Hey everybody, it's Pastor Brian Ross from Grace Life Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We want to thank you once again for tuning into this video. If you're tuning in today, this is part 8, I believe, in my series of videos that I'm doing with my friend Nathan Coinga from Hope Under Fire on the issue of King James Bible Gnosticism. And so we talked in the last video about the 1611 hand revelation that Gary talks about, and we're going to see where that's leading when we get into our next subject that we want to unpack, and that is the issue of the 1611 he-she Bibles, okay? So another one of the strange teachings that Gary advocates for is the significance of these he and she Bibles of 1611, and Gary has talked about this in a few different places. The first place is in his book that was released in November of last year, 2024, Called of God to Translate the King James Bible. Chapters 24 and 25 deal with that, and we'll be looking in detail at those chapters in the video after this one. And then the other place that Gary talks about this issue is in his series here on YouTube on the Above God's Name channel, King James He and She Bible. And so those are the two main places where you're going to want to go to get this for yourself. So we will leave a link in the description for where you can buy a copy of the book, as well as where you can watch Gary's videos. Currently there are three parts. The series purports to be a four-part series, but it's been months now since a fourth video has been added. And then there's another video here in the playlist about genealogies. It's in the playlist on the He-She Bible. There's stuff we could say about that video, but we're not going to right now. So before we really unpack and dive into what Gary says about the He-She Bible issue in 1611, it seems prudent that we understand the backdrop and the relevant issues related to the He-She Bible controversy, okay? Now, for those of you that aren't aware, and you'll get more explanation on this here shortly, in 1611, there were two different editions of the 1611 printed. The first one that was published in the spring of that year read, "He went into the city in Ruth 3:15," and then a Bible published later that year, a second edition published, changed the reading in Ruth 3:15 to "She went into the city." And so it's very common for people to talk about the 1611, and they'll say, well, do you have a He Bible or a She Bible? And what they're referring to is that variant in Ruth 3:15. That's primarily what people are talking about. Now, for us to lay a groundwork on what are the issues related to the He-She Bible controversy in Ruth 3:15, what we're going to do in this video is I'm going to repurpose a video that I released on the Grace Life Bible Church channel on May 23, 2024, titled, "Are He and She Verbally Equivalent in Ruth 3:15?" And that is this video right here, "Are He and She Verbally Equivalent?" This was released, again, on May 23, 2024. Now, we were looking at that as an example of a question that came in related to the publication of my co-authored book with Dave Reed, The Myth of Verbatim Identicality, How God Actually Preserved His Word. But we're going to repurpose this video here in this series to look at the relevant issues behind the controversy on Ruth 3:15. So as we look at the video is going to cover some definitions related to printer's errors. Okay, what is a printer's error by definition? We're going to look at the Ruth 3:15 He and She Bible controversy. So we'll look at kind of the backdrop of some things I just mentioned to you here in this introduction very briefly. We'll look at Hebrew grammar and harder reading arguments related to Ruth 3:15. We'll look at the context of the chapter, Ruth 3:15, and then we'll look at the translational history. All right. So we're going to do all of that in the repurposed video that I'm going to turn this over to here shortly. And then after the video, I'm going to come back on with a new ending, and we're going to look at talk about some conclusion stuff as this relates to Gary's teaching on Ruth 3:15, and then that'll set us up for our next video where we really delve into chapters 24 and 25 of Gary's book, Called of God to Translate the King James Bible, and really unpack what it is that is being said regarding the He-She Bible by the argumentation utilized by Gary Roverino. So without any further delay, we're going to go ahead and flip it over to the video. Again, are he and she verbally equivalent? And this was originally aired on May 23, 2024. Hope you enjoy the information, and we'll see you back at the end for the conclusion. So what we want to do in this video is we want to address the question of printer errors, all right? And one of the questions that we've been getting is about Ruth 3:15 and the he-she Bible controversy regarding this verse, all right? And so we're going to use this, Ruth 3:15, in this video as a framework for discussing the issue of printer's errors in the printings of the King James Bible. So what we want to do to get started is we want to outlay or lay out some clear definitions of some terms. And this came about because Dave and I were having a conversation and we realized that, you know, people are using all sorts of different conceptions about printer errors when they think about this topic. So we wanted to bring some clarity on this. So printer's error, an error introduced into typeset copy by the compositor so that the printer cannot be charged for correcting it. That's Collins English Dictionary. Printing error, a misprint or misspelling in a text, Collins English Dictionary. Okay, I'm going to skip the dictionary.com because it's the same as the Collins English Dictionary. All right. Same thing with the wordreference.com definition of a printer's error, an error introduced into a typeset copy by the compositor so that the printer cannot be charged for correcting it. And then what is a compositor? Because the person that is making the printer's error is the compositor. The compositor is a person who sets the text or type for printing. It's by definition of wordreference.com. Versus an author's alteration, a correction or change made in typeset copy that is not a correction of an error introduced by the compositor. So an author's alteration is not a printer's error. A printer's error is an error that is made in the spelling, typeset, whatever, by the compositor, right? An author's alteration is a change that is coming not from a mistake by the compositor, but by the intention of the author. That is the indication as we look at these things, okay? So having established some definitions, let's now look at the controversy regarding Ruth 3:15, right? So there were two different printings of the Authorized Version in 1611. These printings are famously referred to as the He Bible and the She Bible on the count of a famous variant at Ruth 3:15. So here's a photograph of the He Bible, all right? And you can see that it says here, he went into the city in Ruth 3:15. So this becomes known popularly then as the He Bible, the He variant in the first printing of the 1611. The She Bible corrects this to she went into the city. All right. Now, it is largely understood that the He Bible was the first printing of the 1611 and that a second printing, also dating from 1611, revised the he to she, thus resulting in the She Bible. So for more information on the history, interested parties are encouraged to look at lesson 189 from This Generation Forever class titled The First Edition and the He-She Bible Controversy. All right. So in 1611, there are two different printings. One spells it he went into the city. The other one spells it she went into the city. This is caught and revised very early in the printed history of the text within the same year of 1611. Now, what we want to look at next are the Hebrew grammar and harder reading arguments, and these are put forth most notably by Professor David Norton in his book, A Textual History of the King James Bible. And I have a screenshot from page 57 where the discrepancy in Ruth 3:15 is being discussed. So let's look at what Professor Norton says. Again, this is page 57 of A Textual History of the King James Bible. As examples of problems arising from the original, three similar problems of gender are illuminating. I have already noted the omission of a marginal alternative at Ruth 3:15, where the first edition reads, he went into the city. This follows the received Hebrew text, but the problem is that the context seems to demand that it is Ruth, not Boaz, who went. Most manuscripts and various translations, including the Geneva and the bishops, make the verb feminine. Bob 1602 shows that the translators originally left she unchanged, and the second edition, followed by most subsequent editions, has she. Now, for those of you that haven't followed my class, Bod 1602 is a 1602 Bishop's Bible in the possession of the Bodleian Library that has the handwritten notations of the King James translators in the margin. I still accept that view of the document that it is pre-1611. I think there are possibly post-1611 additions added to it, but I'm getting off track. I just want to tell you what that document is. Okay. Moreover, only if the translators had followed the practice recorded in the report on the Synod of Dort of noting alternative spellings in the margin could one have been certain that he went was deliberate. Now watch. There is then a good case that he went is an error. Now, he went versus she went would be the difference of one English character, the letter S, right? Now, here's what Norton says. 2 points go against this. First, the reading is true to the Hebrew. Second, he went is a hard reading and therefore difficult to take as a copying or printer error. In this case, I think one must trust the first edition. The original may be wrong, but the translators appear to have followed it deliberately. So what Norton is saying is that he thinks that the translators intentionally said he in the 1611, not she. Now, that's his opinion. I don't happen to agree with his opinion in this case of Ruth 3:15. Now, Norton presents 2 points against the conclusion that he went into the city is a printer's error. The first one is stemming from Hebrew grammar, and the second from this notion of the harder reading. Okay, so let's talk about the Hebrew grammar first. Regarding the Hebrew grammar, Norton is correct that the verb in question, and she went, is masculine in Ruth 3:15. So here we see the interlinear. Here's the English phrase from the King James, and she went. Here is the Strong's number, the Hebrew related to that, and we can come over here and we can see that the gender there on the relevant Hebrew word is masculine, not feminine. Okay, so what Norton is saying then is, well, this is true to the Hebrew text, so he went was the intentional reading of the King James translators. It is not a printer's error. That is Norton's argument, okay? That said, the next verb, though, in Ruth 3:16, so this would be the next verse, which is rendered as, and when she came, is clearly feminine, right? So we can go now to Ruth 3:16. Here's the beginning clause, and she came, referring to Ruth, okay? And we can see that that's feminine. So there's a discrepancy between masculine in Ruth 3:15 and feminine in Ruth 3:16, all right? So Norton's suggestion that the King James translators intentionally chose he went in Ruth 3:15 because it is, quote, a hard reading appears to be appealing or applying Westcott and Hort's maxim that the harder reading is to be preferred. Norton even goes so far as to suggest that the Hebrew text could be an error. Now, I don't actually agree with Norton in this case. I think that the more reasonable interpretation of the data is that this is a printer error and that it should say she went into the city, not he went into the city. Now, modern versions, let's just talk about this quickly. Modern versions are split on the matter. The following versions read she in the text with a footnote noting the divided nature of the manuscript evidence. The New King James, many Hebrew manuscripts, Syriac and Vulgate, read she. The Masoretic text, Septuagint, and Targum read he. The ESV reads she with no note. The CSB, some Hebrew manuscripts, Aramaic, Syriac, Vulgate, other Hebrew manuscripts read he. New American Standard 2020, many manuscripts, that would be the she reading. And they note that the majority text has he, and then the LSB, as in many manuscripts, reading she. Okay, so they're noting different variants. And then we can look at other modern versions and see where the reading is he in the text, but it is accompanied by footnotes noting the differences between masculine and feminine in this verse. So before we move on, what that's saying, okay, is that on Ruth 3:15, there is some witnesses that note this as a masculine gender, and there are other witnesses that note this as a feminine gender. And remember that when we look at the very next verse, it is clearly feminine related to Ruth being the one that is going into the city. Okay, so This is an instance where Norton's judgment as to the intentions of the King James translators is questionable, given the entire context of Ruth, chapters 3 and 4, as well as the translational history. So let's talk next then about the context of Ruth, okay? Given the context of Ruth 3:15, he went into the city seems to be a clear example of a printer's error. So to get the context, let's actually go back to chapter 2. Let's look at Ruth chapter 2, verses 17 and 18. In my opinion, these clearly establish that the place where Ruth gleaned was not in the city. In verse 18, Ruth returned to the city with the result of her gleaning. So look at the verse. This is Ruth 2:17. So she gleaned in the field until even and beat out that she had gleaned, and it was about an epheth of barley. Now watch. And she took it up and went into the city. So in verse 17, she's out gleaning. When she's done, she takes up the results of her gleaning and goes into the city. And her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave to her, and she reserved after she was sufficed. So the place of the gleaning is different from the city. It's outside of the city is my point. Okay, now we can go to Ruth chapter 3, look at verse 3. Naomi instructs Ruth to leave the city and get thee down to the floor, i.e. the threshing floor of Boaz. Here's the verse. Wash thyself therefore and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. Then look at Ruth 3, verse 6. Ruth leaves the city as per Naomi's instructions and went down unto the floor and did according to all her mother-in-law bade her. So that's this verse right here, verse 6. And she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. So we already know from Ruth chapter 2, verses 17 and 18, that the place of the gleaning was outside the city. In Ruth chapter 2, verse 17 and 18, Ruth gleans. When she's done, she picks up the results of her gleanings and she goes back to the city. Now in chapter 3, Naomi is instructing Ruth here to, in verse 3, to get thee down to the floor. And then in verse 6, she went down to the floor. Well, we already know from the previous chapter that the threshing floor of Boaz is outside of the city, right? So Ruth 3:15, this is the verse in question. Boaz measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, i.e. Ruth's veil. Here's the verse. Also, he said, bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her, in her veil, right? And she went into the city. Ruth 3:16. Ruth came to her mother-in-law, i.e. she returned into the city from whence she left in verse 6. Moreover, verse 16 records a conversation between Ruth and Naomi regarding what transpired in verses 7 through 15. Here's verse 16, and when she came to her mother-in-law, and we've already noted that this is clearly a Hebrew feminine, right? And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, who art thou, my daughter? And she told her all that the man had done to her. So clearly what is happening in the context of Ruth chapter 3 is Naomi is instructing Ruth to get to the threshing floor of Boaz, which we already know from Ruth chapter 2 is outside of the city. Ruth goes. Boaz measures into her veil in verse 15, 6 measures of barley. And then Ruth goes into the city. And in the very next verse, she's having a conversation with her mother-in-law, Naomi, about what went down. So the context of Ruth 3:15 is clear that it was Ruth, she, who went into the city in verse 15, and not Boaz, he. Boaz does not return to the city until Ruth chapter 4, verse 1. Then went up Boaz to the gate, and he sat him down there, and behold, the kinsman of whom Boaz spake came by, unto whom he said, ho, such and one, turn aside, sit down here. And he turned aside and sat down. So Boaz does not get into the city until, or go up into the city, excuse me, until chapter 4, verse 1,
where he sits in the gate and waits for the near kinsman to come by so that he can have a conversation with him. So contextually, it makes the most sense to view Ruth 3:15 as saying she went into the city given all of the factors of the context. Okay. Now we also need to consider here the translational history. Prior to 1611, all English Bibles read she in Ruth 3:15. So here is the Wycliffe Old Testament, and notice the pertinent section, and put it on her, and she bare and entered the city. So we can see that this is using a feminine here. Coverdale, 1535, right? She went into the city, clearly referring to Ruth in this verse, in Coverdale's from 1535. Matthew's 1537, okay? Notice, barley and laid it on her, and she gat her, and I cut this off too soon, into the city. And she gat her into the city, Great Bible, 1539, 1540, and laid it on her, and she gat her into the city. Geneva, 1560, okay, and laid them on her, and went into the city. So that one's a little bit less clear, but it's obvious that Boaz is laying it on her, and she then is going to go into the city. Here's the Bishops from 1568, and laid it on her, and she gat her into the city. The 1602 Bishops, and laid it on her, and she gat her into the city. So it's very clear when you look at all the translational evidence in English leading up to the King James Bible that all of these prior English Bibles are reading she went into the city in some way, shape, manner, or form. Now, the wording is slightly different than what we see in the 1611, but it's clear that it's reference to what Ruth's activity in all of these Bibles. Okay, now here is Bod 1602. Bod 1602 is in the possession of the Bodleian Library, and you can see here the annotations that are being made to this verse, both interlinearly and in the margin. Okay, so Bod 1602 records the changes made to Ruth 3:15 by the King James translators. Notice they strike through and replace it with also. Okay, they strike through again and remove it from the text. They strike through mantle and they change it to veil. So mantle is replaced with veil. Meet in here is replaced with measured from the margin. Okay. And gat her is replaced here with went, right? So, and she went into the city, all right? So all of the revisions of the 1602 bishops recorded by the King James translators in Bod 1602 are reflected in the final product of 1611, okay? Most importantly, notice that she is left in the text of Bod 1602 by the King James translators. So notice when we look at the annotations here, there's no change to she. There's a change to gat her to went, and she went into the city versus and she gat her into the city. But there's no change that is made to the she in the verse by the King James translators. Okay. So most importantly, notice that she is left in the text of Bod 1602 by the King James translators. Put another way, judging by the evidence furnished by Bod 1602, it was the translator's intention that the text read, she went into the city in Ruth 3:15. The translational data and evidence suggest that it was their intention to keep she in the reading and not change it to he. So contextually, that makes sense, a she reading, okay? And all the translational data suggests that in the English translation history that she would be the correct reading. But then we have the 1611, the first printing of the 1611, and all of a sudden we encounter he went into the city in English. Nothing before this in English would suggest that that should be the reading. Now, the difference between he and she is a difference of only one English character, okay? So it does not make sense to adopt a position regarding Ruth 3:15 that would require the King James translators choose against the collective witness of all prior English Bibles that they were charged with comparing the 1602 bishops against, according to Rule 14. Okay, so when they put another way, when they look at Ruth 3:15, in the 1602 bishops, and then they compare it against everything that's come before, there's no reason to suggest in any of that translational data or history that a change from she to he would be something that they would do. Moreover, Bod 1602 clearly indicates that the translators did not change she to he during the stage of the work represented by the document, Bod 1602. Okay? All the contextual and translational evidence suggests that he went into the city was a printer's error in the first edition of the 1611. Later the same year, 1611, a folio edition appeared revising the text to read, she went into the city. And so here's, again, is a photo of the She Bible here, okay? In short order, she went into the city became the standard King James reading. The following table compares editions containing the respective readings, okay? So we encounter the he reading for the first time in the first edition of the 1611 folio. The she reading is by the second folio edition of 1611. It's already been revised. Okay. And then from there, there are only three subsequent editions, a 1612 octavo, a 1612 Roman type quarto, and a 1613 black letter quarto that maintain the he reading. Whereas we compare the she reading, it's already corrected in a 1612 or revised in a 1612 octavo, a 1612 Roman type quarto, a 1613 black letter quarto, 1613 folio, 1616, 1617 folio, as well as the 1629 and 1638 Cambridge editions maintain the she reading. Okay. So in other words, this is caught very early and it seems to be revised and corrected almost immediately before the year 1611 is out. And then the she reading becomes the standard King James reading. So the most natural interpretation of the evidence is to view he went into the city as a printer's error in the initial printing of 1611. There is only a difference of one English character between he and she, and thus it is easy to see how this could be an error of the compositor. Remember, a printer's error is an error of the compositor by definition of a printer's error. Remember, the compositor is the one who laid the type out, okay? So the error was quickly caught and corrected in the second folio printing of 1611. After 1613, she went into the city, became the accepted King James reading as it was accepted. Sorry, let me read that again. After 1613, she went into the city, became the accepted King James Version reading as it was the accepted English reading prior to 1611. So this situation that we've outlined in this video meets the definition of a printer's error slash printing error identified above at the beginning of this video. What is a printer's error? An error introduced into typeset copy by the compositor so that the printer cannot charge for correcting it. And a printer error is a misprint or misspelling in a text. A difference of one English character between he and she is clearly a printer error, a printer's error in this case. So the reading, he went into the city in Ruth 3:15 in the first printing of the KJV in 1611 is the classic printer's error for all of the following respects, in all of the following respects. So it's a printer's error for the following reasons. Number one, it varies from the translator's expressed intention in Bod 1602, while the first printing otherwise matches Bod 1602 verbatim in Ruth 3:15. I showed you that above. Number two, it is the type of variant, a single letter, that can be easily explained by an error in the typesetting process. Number three, it was identified immediately as a printer's error, as opposed to being claimed as a printer's error many years later. Number four, it was promptly corrected in subsequent printings. And number five, it was quickly supplanted by the correct reading of she went into the city, which has become the accepted King James Version reading, just as it was the accepted English reading prior to 1611. So, the purpose of this video is to clearly state out some criteria lay out some criteria for what can truly be called a printer's error, and we're using Ruth 315 as an example of this.
All right. What you just saw should give you a good handle on the relevant information regarding the He-She Bible controversy. Again, we just went through the definitions. We went through Ruth 315 and the He-She controversy. We looked at the Hebrew grammar and harder reading arguments, the context, and then the translational history. So let's kind of put a bow on this this video related to how all this relates to Gary and the He-She Bible arguments that he's making. First of all, in his book, Gary argues for the purified seven times argument based upon Psalm 12, 6, and 7. All right? This includes the following seven Bibles, according to Gary, all of which are depicted above as reading she. So we already saw in the translational history that they all read she. Now, the one Bible that we're going to have to add to this shortly is the Tavner's Bible. But we can see here that after decorating Miles Coverdale and his Miles Coverdale Bible in the 74 Hall of Fame, that's related to some numerical argument he's making, okay, would come five more complete Bibles printed in English. So we've got the Coverdale Bible, 1535. We have the Matthew's Bible, 1537. Tavener's, 1539. Great Bible, 1539. Geneva, 1560. Bishop's, 1568. And the King James Bible, okay? So when the Bible, the Word of God, was purified in English seven times from Coverdale, Matthew's, Tavener's, Great, Geneva, Bishop's to the 1611 King James Bible, from each to the next was more growth and more favor with God and man. Okay, so here's the Tavener's Bible screenshot. You can see, I don't know why this control thing won't leave my screen, but it's somewhat annoying. Tavener's 1539, you can see here, and she gat her into the city. Okay, so none of the pre-1611 Bibles in Gary's line of purification read he went into the city. All of them read she went into the city. So all the contextual and translational evidence suggests that he went into the city was a printer's error, all right, as we argued in the main bulk of this video, in the first edition of 1611, okay? Later the same year, still 1611, a folio edition appeared revising the text to read, she went into the city. Now, Gary rejects the idea that this conclusion, okay, he rejects the conclusion that he was a typo in the first edition of the 1611 in favor of a more mystical interpretation. Now, this is one of the things we've been talking about in this series, the mysticism involved here. Gary's interpretation is very mystical. On pages 181 and 182 of Called of God to Translate the King James Bible, Gary states the following, okay? Notice what he says. If you enter 1611 King James Great He and She Bible into Google, you will find pages of links on this phenomenon that the Holy Ghost has illuminated particular attention to, with explanations from Museum of the Bible in the United States to the BBC in England, the two great lands of the King James Bible's witness and testimony. Unfortunately for them, however, is their explanation of this phenomenon a mere typo? So he's saying it's not a printer error. If you're going to say it's a printer error, that's not a suitable explanation for what's going on. Then he says, to natural man's evil response to the miracle and wonder and sign of God governing he and she Bible is to minimize, dismiss, ignore, and finally to invalidate. We've seen exploits from the fairy, and he goes on to talk about fairy stories and fairy tales, okay? So the idea that it's a typo, the idea that it's a printer's error, the idea that the evidence should point in a different direction, Gary is completely against this idea. From page 187, should also be considered. Notice what he says here. We just saw that the last thing you want to do is believe that the he and she purposeful editions of the King James Bible are due to a typo. So he thinks these are intentionally done by God in 1611 to have a he Bible and to have a she Bible. He thinks this is the intentional work of God. Okay, so it's a mistake to say that they're a typo, which would amount to a mistake in the Word of God. Now, let me just say, printer errors happen all the time. They're not mistakes in the Word of God. They're just errors of the press. That's all they are. They're not like they're mistranslations. It's not like, you know, somebody's trying to take verses out like they do in modern versions. That's not at all what's going on. It's simply a printer's error, okay?
To the contrary, the great He Bible and great She Bible have come in the fullness and wisdom of God. So it's the will of God that there be a 1611 He Bible and a 1611 She Bible, according to Gary's argumentation. Satan perpetrates the front of a typo through God's own people, who are intended to hold up God's standard against Satan, but instead perpetuate the lie out of their own satanic nature within themselves that they have not taken to the cross to be dealt with. So that would mean that my explanation, based upon the context, the grammar, the translational history, it's a satanic interpretation. Because I come to the conclusion, based upon the preponderance of the evidence, that it's a printer error that was easily fixed and that it was a typo. But that's a satanic interpretation, according to Gary's argumentation. Gary suggests that those who view the matter as a typo slash printer's error, quote, perpetuate the lie out of their own satanic nature. Now, why would he do this? Because Gary believes the great He Bible and great She Bible have come in the fullness and the wisdom of God, quoting what he said in the book. Okay? So, the He Bible, She Bible, the He She Bible, according to Gary, was prophesied on the title page to the 1611 in his video series that he does on the He She Bible on YouTube. God teaches, Gary claims, by letters, numbers, and pictures in his finished book. So there's a segment, you can watch it, where he's talking about that this is God's finished book, and he uses everything in the finished book, every letter, every number, every picture. It's all there by God through divine, some sort of divine intervention or supernatural explanation to make sure that everything is there so that people can learn. So the title page, the first page of the 1611 communicates this. So here's a screenshot from the video. Okay, so this is from the first video, part one, and you'll notice at the 51:47 second mark, he puts up the from the title page of the 1611. Okay, the Holy Bible containing the Old Testament and the New, newly translated out of the original tongues and with the former translations diligently compared and revised by His Majesty's special command, appointed to be read in the churches. Imprinted at London by Robert Barker, printer, to the King's Most Excellent Majesty, Anno Dom 1611. Okay. Then not long after that, he accents the word majesty on the title page of the 1611. So he brings that out here. Shortly after that, you see the title page of the book, Called of God to Translate the King James Bible, and notice the anagram. We talked about this in a previous video. Majesty is reworked to Jamesesty, which, again, is not a word, so a violation of the use rules for the use of anagrams as a legitimate literary device. And then notice what we see here with the title page again. Okay, so James, which he pulls out of Majesty, which he got out of Most Excellent Majesty here, he uses an anagram to retitle this Jamesesty, and then he uses his retitled James, which he pulls out of Majesty, not using all the letters, and then he comes down here and reaches for Anno, and he pulls that up, and he brings the E down from James, and he says Anne. And it happens that King James was married to Queen Anne of Denmark, and so, see, you have a he, she, James being the he, Anne being the she, and he's pulling this out of a 1611 title page. So all of this in Gary's interpretive grid demonstrates that the title page of the King James Bible is prophesying the arrival of a he and a she Bible in 1611. So again, you can't make this stuff up. As outlandish as this may sound to you, you got to check out the link in the video and go listen to it for yourself. Because I assure you that it's not. This is the argumentation that is being used, okay? So, one more time. We've got the title page. God uses everything on the title page. We lift Majesty off there, Most Excellent Majesty. We use an anagram to pull out James. Then on the next, we take the anagram, James, that we pulled out, which wasn't a full anagram. We lift Anno out of this. We drop the E down, and now we have James and Anne, see, he, she, okay? And then the argument is made very clear. So, again, James, Anne, 1611, he, she,
16:11, and here we have the argument made very clearly here. Let me decrease this here so we can see James is the he, Anne is the she, 16:11. This is prophesying the he-she Bible of 16:11 using this type of argumentation. Okay, very similar to the argumentation that we've observed throughout this series as we've critiqued this information. So, in the next installment of the conversation, we're going to unpack the totality of Gary's argumentation, I should say, related to the he and she Bible. And we will do that in the next video. Nate and I will be talking together. So, as always, we appreciate everybody watching this. If you've enjoyed this video, like it, share it, leave a comment. Please help get the word out about this topic. And with that being said, if you've never trusted Jesus Christ, He died on the cross for your sin. He rose again the third day, the victor over sin and death. Trust Jesus Christ today for your eternal salvation before it's everlasting too late. Thanks for your attention, and we'll see you next time.